Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. We live in an age where scams are the new normal. A charismatic entrepreneur sells thousands of tickets for a festival that never happens. Respected investors pour millions into a startup centered around fake blood tests. Reviewers and celebrities flock to London's top-rated restaurant that's little more than a backyard shed. These unsettling stories of today's viral grifters have risen to fame and hit the front page headlines. Yet the curious conundrum remains, why do these scams happen? Why are we falling for it? Gabrielle Bluestone is executive director of the Netflix documentary Fire, and she is a journalist and licensed attorney from New York. Her new book is Hype: How Scammers, Grifters, and Con Artists Are Taking Over the Internet and Why We're Following. And it's a pleasure to welcome Gabrielle to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome. What was it about this subject? I assume even the work on the documentary, what got you thinking about this and looking at this, yes, hype?
Yeah. So I was the original reporter who broke the Fyre Festival story. And for your listeners who might not know what that is, that was a music festival that was hyped up as the most luxurious, wonderful festival ever created. They promised their ticket holders that they were going to be flown on private jets to a private island in the Bahamas where they would be greeted by, you know, some of America's top models and food catered by the celebrity chef Stephen Starr and all of these outrageous amenities. And when the ticket holders actually arrived, what they found was a gravel construction pit with FEMA tents and a very sad cheese sandwich that went viral on the internet. But as I reported out this story and then worked on the documentary, what really struck me was not so much what Fyre Festival CEO Billy McFarland, who's a 25-year-old entrepreneur, what he had gotten away with, but rather why it works so well. And the festival seemed this perfect indictment of our media culture, of our startup and tech culture, of our influencer culture, and of the way that we use social media.
So obviously all those things had to do with this Fyre Festival, but, and then I assume you look out into the world and see that this is not a lone case.
No, not at all. And as you mentioned, it's the same kind of mindset that allow, you know, businesses like Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes to raise hundreds of millions of dollars for a blood test that never existed. Or, you know, WeWork's Adam Newman to raise billions of dollars for what was essentially an office subleasing company. Or even, you know, companies that we think of as gold chip or, you know, unicorn companies like Uber that have never turned a profit. What I realized is that we as a culture have started to accept hype and marketing as indicators of the real thing. And we don't really seem to care very much anymore whether the actual company or what's, you know, what's behind the marketing matches what we're seeing at all.
It's a fascinating look. And I guess here's a question that I had while reading it and even in watching the documentary. So at the beginning, at the very, very beginning, when the plans are underway, do you think it was the intent for this to be a scam, or I don't want to glorify this in some way, but were there better intentions perhaps than we think now that they could actually pull it off and that just didn't happen?
Well, that's a great question. And that's one of the reasons that I started working on this book was I was so surprised by how many people who were involved with the festival or knew the festival CEO questioned whether he was really a scammer or whether he was just someone who got in over his head. Now, the answer to that is he is 100% a scammer. While he was out on bail for charges related to the Fyre Festival, he actually committed a second set of felonies and stole more than $100,000 from his original victims. But generally, you know, it is an industry that tolerates this magical thinking and this fake it until you make it mentality. And so I don't think the question of whether it was intended to be a scam or not is actually the relevant question here, because that's the standard of doing business now is over-promising and then hoping that you can match up with your marketing.
Yeah. Well, and also that before people arrive, you know that you're screwed and you should stop inviting people and tell them not to come because it ain't working. I mean, I would just think that even if you, before you have people show up and see that, you know, you're getting baloney, that maybe both figuratively and realistically, that you say, oh, okay, you know, sorry, we're not ready for this. And that's better PR than having people show up, have these clips go viral, and then go down the drain.
Well, that's certainly true. And there's no denying that in those last couple of weeks before the festival, they knew that they were not going to be able to pull it off. And my book really goes into that, delving into the correspondence and the contingency plans that they were trying to come up with. But what it essentially boiled down to was Billy had lied about obtaining festival insurance. So if they canceled it, they would have no recourse. And in a last-ditch effort to raise money, he had sold the factored receivables for the festival. So, you know, any credit card receipts or whatever was supposed to go back to investors. So he really had no way to cancel it. He was, like, hopelessly locked in by the end of it. But, yeah, they really did think about and try. They had one of the top Hollywood PR firms trying to come up with explanations for them and excuses. And, you know, it was just this slow burn toward disaster.
And I guess I go back to this. I keep going back to this, I guess, is that if you know it's going to be a disaster from the very beginning, and you end up, in jail. So that's, you know, I'm just wondering where the smarts is here that you say that you start building something that you can't. I mean, the idea of a scam is to make money, right? So what money was made in this and what ultimately did he get out of it? I guess we'll start there.
Yeah, well, Billy McFarland was an excellent marketer, and he convinced investors to put, I think, $26 million into this festival. And, you know, in my research for this, what it appears happened was he wanted to live the lifestyle that he was seeing on Instagram, that private jets and models and constant vacation kind of lifestyle that influencers really push on their followers. And so what he got out of it was he got to spend a year chartering jets, flying back and forth to the Bahamas under the guise of, you know, doing work for this festival. He became friends with the models he was following, and he got to live that lifestyle. And what I think is interesting about it, and what I think they were counting on and almost happened, and I truly believe that this would have happened, was if they had been able to pull up a bit more of a semblance of a festival, you know, all the musical acts pulled out before the festival even began.
Right.
But if they had been able to get a few bands on stage, I think the nature of social media and the way that, you know, we as individuals, particularly millennials and Gen Z, that people would have gone along with it. And they would have found, you know, a picture or some way of pretending that they were having a good time, because who wants to admit that they're scammed? Who wants to admit that they were taken for fools? I think people would have gone along with the ruse that this was some exceptional vacation.
So that brings up a great point about social media. So how much is social media responsible for this? And I don't mean that we blame social media, but it is allowed to show the lifestyle that you mentioned, number one, but two, to also get the people interested in what you're doing so that you give them the said money.
Well, social media has completely poisoned our brains. And reporting out this book as a social media user was very disturbing for me. Basically, you can track this rise of negative affect to the moment that social media migrated from laptops to our cell phones, so that we were constantly connected. Because then not only can you see what everyone is doing and how they're living, you're seeing it in real time. And you're seeing this highlight reel presented as if it were an accurate depiction of real life. So in that sense, I think we're all kind of scammers on the internet, because we are presenting this idealized version. I think this rise of FOMO culture in particular has led people to they're experiencing events not for what's really happening, but for how they can then portray it on social media, right? Like this this concept of doing it for the gram. And, you know, I think a lot of people have had the experience where they go to a party that's not that fun, or, you know, they go to an event that's whatever, but you take a good picture and you make it look good on the internet, and that somehow elevates the experience of it. So I think we're all, you know, you see the obvious rise with like things like QAnon and the January 6th insurrection of how this is poisoning our brains. But I think it acts in much more small, insidious ways too.
So I try my hardest in life. I'm a 53-year-old guy, and I try my hardest in life to not fall into the trap of feeling old or you know, of saying I don't understand this or I don't understand that. But for God's sakes, tell me what I mean. I understand the concept, but what an influencer is, what a social media influencer is, what the hell? So I don't get it. I mean, you get these people who have you know, anywhere from 500,000 to 4 million followers. They're going on, and we, like idiots, are not only following them but also following them and giving them our money. How? First of all, how do you get that job? And second of all, who polices that, or is that up to us and we're just dummies and keep doing it?
Yeah, well, a social media influencer is a very loose term. I think it refers more to the following that they have than any particular job or aesthetic or industry. Quite simply, they are people who have a lot of eyeballs on them, who advertisers want to access. And so, you know, whether they are presenting a beautiful lifestyle or curating nature photos, whatever it is, they are providing something visual that we're enjoying. And as a result, they are able to slip ads in there. Their value to marketers is not what they are posting on the internet. It's us. It's how many followers they have. And unfortunately, there really is little to no oversight of that, right? Like the government, you know, if an influencer fails to label some content as an ad, the government can send, you know, a strongly worded letter. They can possibly go after the company that paid that influencer. But there's not a lot of recourse there. So unfortunately, the onus is on the consumer to go into these things with kind of a cynical view that people are really trying to sell us stuff and there's no real regulation around it. But yeah.
So here's what worries me. I teach college courses and in journalism, and I will sit there on the first day of class, and you walk around and you say, you know, back when you had class in front of you, or even if you're on Zoom, and you say, what would you like to be, you know, when you grow up? And the kids say, whoa, I would like to be a filmmaker. I would like to be a newspaper reporter. I would like to be a sports reporter. And then invariably, one of these kids will say, I want to be a social media influencer. Well, I don't know. I don't know how to help that kid. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And it bothers me, A, that I can't help them, and B, that they want to be that.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't want to be paid to be themselves, right? I mean, that is, on its surface, the dream. But I do think that that is a result of the way that we use social media, right? And the way that it has changed our behavior. Ostensibly, if you have an account, you are following a bunch of your friends, and then you're following brands and celebrities and that kind of thing. But your friends are behaving like brands. Brands are behaving like your friends. And it all looks the same, right? There's no delineation between posts that are ads and posts that are genuine. And I really think it's melting our brains.
So the name of the book is Hype, and a lot of this obviously has to do with hype. So ultimately, in your conclusion, what do we do about it?
I think we have to take a really hard look at how the marketing matches the actual product, whether that is Elon Musk or a beautiful music festival or, you know, the top-rated restaurant on TripAdvisor that turned out to be a shed in someone's backyard. We need to look past these indicators that we have started to accept as shortcuts for the real thing. So just because something has a high rating or a bunch of reviews or, you know, fawning press, like, we need to look at what the actual underlying product is and then decide for ourselves whether that marketing accurately reflects it.
You mentioned Elon Musk, but is Elon Musk the product or is it his brand? And why is he hosting Saturday Night Live?
That's an excellent question. You know, above all else, Elon Musk is an excellent marketer. If you look at what he is famous for, I mean, he managed to convince the world that his, you know, a tunnel boring company that creates little tunnels for Teslas is a futuristic Hyperloop system, despite the fact that he has never once created that thing. He's managed to convince the world that basically a heightened cruise control is the world's premier self-driving car system, despite the fact that that has resulted in, I think, more than 30 crashes, many of them fatal.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that he's hosting SNL and pumping Dogecoin as part of his promotion for that. I mean, the man is excellent at marketing without really having anything underlying it.
Not that I'm saying anything against a guy who, you know, tries to sell the world flamethrowers. However, that's what I know about him. I know about the flamethrowers. I know about him smoking weed with Joe Rogan. I know about him going to space. And you can't dismiss the fact that the guy is responsible for going to space. I mean, we don't just do that in our basement, not to mention Tesla, of course. But it is also hard. Like, you can't pick and choose, right? I mean, you have to say, okay, this one's legitimate and this one seems to be way off course.
Sure, but also, you know, that kind of reputation provides cover for the fact that many of his rockets have blown up on the launch pad, and the fact that he has littered space with all of this, you know, there's a bunch of junk and trash floating around in space right now, and you know, the fact that the sky will never look the same again because it's almost impossible to differentiate real stars now from satellites. Like, it's, you know, there's much more underlying the idea that he is this genius who is advancing science in that way. But because he has that reputation, and I actually, in the book, I spoke to a tech writer who had worked at a website where they were essentially not allowed to write negative Elon Musk articles because their audience loved Elon Musk and they needed their audience to promote these articles on Facebook. That was the company's entire, you know, monetary system. And so it's insidious and it all plays into one another. You know, reporting the Fyre Festival, one of the things that really struck me were how many of the legacy press endorsed this thing because the festival had the right influencers behind it, right? Like Vanity Fair, Vogue, they were pumping it as the party of the century.
Yeah.
And it's funny if you go back and look now, because some of those websites have edited the Fyre Festival out of those articles. Like, they just quietly deleted it as if it never happened.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is it's head scratching, but it's fascinating. It's Hype: How Scammers, Grifters, and Con Artists Are Taking Over the Internet and Why We're Following. The book is published by Hanover Square Press. Gabrielle Bluestone, congratulations on the great job, and thank you for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Be well. Again, you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.